Welcome into Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. We're going to be taking your questions later in the show. Use that hashtag BucksLive. Send us anything about the team, the league, anything else like that. We'll try to tackle all of it. And we're going to be getting a little bit into the combine, free agency even, and some things that we saw in some articles of what each team needs to do in this NFC South to make that next jump. So plenty of topics to get into here. We definitely need to start with the change in the coaching staff that has happened since our last show. Jay Hayes, no longer the defensive line coach here. Just wanted to get your thoughts on the change and what we can expect moving forward for the team.
Yeah, it looked like there weren't going to be any changes other than sort of the reassigning of responsibilities with Todd Monken just being a straight, what Coach Cutter called a walk-around offensive coordinator, and Skylar Fulton taking on the receivers. But we have a late change in the staff, and it is a little bit of a surprise because the timing of it isn't normal. It doesn't mean it's good or bad. It's just not when these kind of things normally happen. And I think it was probably a very difficult decision for Dirk Cutter. But now you turn to, obviously they're going to bring in somebody new. And what are who are the candidates for that? We see a lot of names being bounced around. There isn't really any concrete information on that yet, although I assume that Paul Speicher will have an opportunity to interview for that job. But I just want to point out that Buccaneer fans shouldn't – I haven't seen any names of college coaches put out there yet, and we shouldn't forget that. That is another avenue from which to add coaches and find potentially really good coaches. And really, the Buccaneers have a pretty decent history of finding good coaches and giving them their first NFL job. I mean, some of the names are really big, like Rod Marinelli, Mike Tomlin, Lovie Smith. There's many of them through the years. So it's not a it's not something that we should forget. That's another avenue to find a coach. So
yeah, that's a really great point.
And could make a big difference.
Yeah, and it is interesting always just anytime changes are made of what that's going to mean for evaluations and looking at the combine coming up and free agency and all of that, that whoever ends up being brought in is going to have to get caught up pretty quickly here. And we know defensive line is an area that a lot of fans are hoping some additions are made. So I think that would be very interesting to see how the coaching change plays into some of those changes as
Yeah, whoever you're going to hire probably has a philosophy. He's going to be presenting a philosophy of how he likes to coach off defensive linemen. And you would think you would want that guy, if that's the guy you eventually hire, you'd want that voice in the room at the combine when you're watching the players work out, and even probably more importantly, when they're in those interviews. And I know that there's going to be an emphasis, and there always has been, but maybe I think even a little bit more so from our guys, our personnel guys, on the type of person that we're bringing into the building. And so those interviews at the combine are going to be very, very important. I'm not saying that that hasn't been important in the past and every team works on that, but I think it's going to be a particular point of emphasis.
Yeah, that's a really great point. And speaking of the combine, we're only a couple weeks away now. So some of the big things that maybe you're already looking towards of what you want to see and what you think we'll be able to get an indication of. We always say that the combine is way overhyped, and then you never really know what all is going to come of it or how much stock you should put into it. So when you're approaching it, how do you tend to look
at it? Actually, I think that the pendulum has swung back a little bit on that issue of how overhyped the combine is. It certainly it got to the point where it was considered incredibly important, and everybody likes to bring up the name Mike Mamula and the workout warrior from 1995, and everybody considers him a bust, which isn't really true. He actually had a pretty decent career. But there tended to be sort of a backlash on people are taking too much putting too much stock in what happens in that 1 week compared to all the other scouting you do. But when we've talked to our guys there in the last couple of years, we've been fortunate enough to go there and interview, you know, John Spytek, Mike Beal, guys like that. They've said this is very, very important. So, you know, the media may disagree on how important it is, but that's maybe the single biggest week in the entire lead up to the draft. So it's really important. Now, in terms of what the Buccaneers are looking for, what I think, because we're picking seventh and because it seems like there's so many possible ways you could go there, what you're going to be looking for is which of those names we keep seeing is really going to separate. Like, as an example, Notre Dame's Quentin Nelson. Right now you're hearing he's easily the best offensive lineman available. Well, if at the combine that appears to be very true and everybody – you know, it sort of has that thought confirmed, is that going to push his stock a little higher to the point where there's no chance he gets to number seven? Or if it looks like there is a deeper pool of offensive linemen and it's a little closer than that, then maybe there's more linemen in play if the Buccaneers want to go that direction with pick number seven. You could say the same thing about Saquon Barkley at running back. And then, of course, everybody's going to be interested to see how the quarterbacks do, because right now every mock draft you've looked at is different.
Yeah.
They arrange them all differently.
Does that seem even more the case this year as compared to some others? I feel like usually your top at least five picks, I don't know, usually are fairly consistent across a lot of mock
drafts. It's all over the board.
And yeah, why do you think that's
Well, part of the reason is because Cleveland holds picks 1 and 4. So you look at Cleveland and go, this draft, the recent history, all the picks they have, they've got to pick a quarterback, right? They've got to pick a quarterback. But they don't have to pick a quarterback at number one. Right. Because if they feel that they have three guys they like, that they feel good about any one of them, or if their scouting tells them the guy they like the most isn't necessarily the one that's going to go first, they can go, say, Saquon Barkley. Pick Saquon Barkley with the first pick. And you can see, it's been a long time since anybody's picked a running back first overall, but you can see when it's a certain situation that would really help them, they're probably going to lose Isaiah Crowell in free agency. And you see the instant impact that a guy like Ezekiel Elliott or Leonard Fournette makes. And they can pick that guy at 1 and then still get the quarterback at 4. Or they think, this is the one quarterback we have to have, then they got to pick him at 1. Hmm. So, you know, until you have a good feel or a good guess, really, because only they know for what Cleveland wants to do, these mock drafts are still going to be all over the board.
Right. And do you think that what teams decide about quarterbacks is going to be the number one determining factor in who the Bucs are going to be able to pick?
Yeah, and I could see it going one of two ways. You know, obviously, for us, it would be wonderful if the quarterbacks all rise up, you know, as they tend to do. If there were 3 or 4 quarterbacks that go in the first 6 picks, that's fantastic for the Buccaneers because I assume we're not going to take a quarterback, and that just gives you more options that make it to 7.
Right.
But let's say that doesn't happen. Let's say the Kirk Cousins signs with Denver or the Jets, and so neither of those teams is looking for a guy. Let's say one of them trades for Nick Foles or something like that. If the quarterbacks don't go in a rush, let's say only one of them goes, or only two of them goes before the Buccaneers. Well, now at 7, the Buccaneers are suddenly sitting there at a very attractive position for a team that might want to trade up. That doesn't happen in that range very often. Usually if you know, like with the Carson Wentz and the Jared Goff draft, those were the first 2 picks because they had to make sure they were going to get those guys. So they had to be either 1 or 2. Now, you don't see the trades at number 7 for a quarterback very often. It's usually teams jockeying around for, you know, a linebacker or something like that. But if that pick is suddenly sitting there with 2, 3, or 4 of the top quarterbacks available, now maybe the Buccaneers have a golden opportunity to trade down, which would probably be a good idea considering the Bucs' needs and the depth of this draft.
That's a really interesting point. All right, we're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, we're going to get to an article that we thought was really interesting, talking about some needs of the NFC South team and maybe a little bit more into that draft, and, of course, get to your Twitter questions. You can keep sending those in. Use that hashtag BucsLive. We'll be right back.
I don't know nobody's going to let another man walk in their house and take something from them. Don't take that to heart. This is personal to me.
Yeah. We call this the jungle, man. Yeah. It's our house today, man. Yeah. That'd be great, man. Let's go. Let's get it there, man.
Be legendary today. Yeah. Don't forget, this is our house. Yeah. This is our house. Yeah. Yeah.
Now takes the snap, looks to his right, look, crossing round ball, caught ball, touchdown, Tampa Bay Buccaneers! Hit the backdrop! It's a Lavonte David quarterback sack, his second of the game.
Let's make it count, we're past the 50, okay?
Big Winston looking. James gonna run to the left of the 10. He throws to the shot! Touchdown, Tampa Bay!
Attack, technique, and takeaway. Got it?
It's picked off. Intercepted at the 30, to the 25, to the 20. Quan Alexander will take it to the house. Touchdown, Tampa Bay.
Welcome back to Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. We're going to be getting to your Twitter questions in just a couple minutes, so make sure you're still sending those in. Use that hashtag BucsLive. I've already seen some entertaining ones for sure. Oh, one really? Of them is actually from Donovan Smith. He is interning in our department today, doing sort of the digital and production side of things. And he asked, what do you think of Donovan Smith interning at the facility?
Well, I think
it's
terrible.
No,
he's a man of many talents, huh?
To see if he's watching, maybe this should be the test, is that we should say that he's doing a terrible
job.
Well,
you shot something with him today, didn't
we
you?
We did,
How
yes.
did he do?
He did a great job. I was very impressed.
Not surprised.
Yeah, I mean, he's so shy, right? You know, that being in front of a camera seems
like
terrifying.
Type who would be cool under pressure.
Yes, and that was what we told him. The confidence is key,
right.
And he shot a Bucks beat and talked.
Is that going to be on the website?
Yep, we're going to put that up later, and it talked about how he's basically doing an internship around the building. Monday he was with ticketing, and Tuesday with events. Today he's with us, and then tomorrow he's going to do some stuff with graphic design, so it's a pretty cool week for him here. You know,
does he know he could travel
around
the world or something like that?
You know, I think that should speak so highly to hanging out with us.
Well, he clearly likes it around here.
Wonderful.
Yes, the feeling's mutual.
That is true. All right, so before we get to the rest of these Twitter questions here, I know we'd wanted to talk a little bit about this article you saw about the five things each NFC South team needs to do.
It's the time of year, especially on ESPN.com, where they're doing these one big move every team
right.
should make or something. But this one, in contrast, is by Bill Barnwell, who is a writer, an NFL writer that I like to read. And he's going through division by division all the teams and saying five things they need to do this year. And generally, this offseason. And generally, when you read one of these, some of it you agree with it. Some you're like, I don't know. But I think he was pretty much on point with all five. So his were they need to pick up the fifth-year option on Jameis Winston. Even though in his article he's still not sure if if he's sold on the long term or not. I think the Buccaneers probably are a little bit more so than he is. Number two was sign Mike Evans to a big new contract, which we all probably think is maybe one of the main priorities this offseason. It would be shocking to see Mike Evans go anywhere else. Then re-sign Ali Marpet at some point, and he suggests moving back to guard, saying he was fine as a center but has Pro Bowl potential as a guard, and you could address center and upgrade somewhere in free agency or the draft. So that's three, and then what was the rest of it here? That was four, actually. And then, some players that might be removed from the roster just to give you more space, and then draft Denzel Ward, the cornerback, which is not a name we've thrown out yet, but you know how I feel about cornerbacks. Yeah. And I think that would even be better if we rewind to our earlier discussion, if the Buccaneers were able to trade down a little bit. So I just thought that was pretty much on point. And it shows me it's not a really complicated blueprint for what the Buccaneers need to do. I know we were 5-11 last year, but again, as we've said a lot of really close losses there. I don't think they're that far away, and a lot of the things the Buccaneers need to do, I think it's a pretty obvious blueprint. It's not mentioned in here because he can't know what we're going to be able to get necessarily in free agency in the draft, but I think the number one thing the Bucs need to do is find pass rush help.
Okay. Yep.
But there was nothing wrong with any of those five choices, and I think he generally does a good job.
Okay. All right, let's go ahead and get into some of these Twitter questions. This is a really interesting one that I don't know if we'll know the answer, but it's something I would like to ask our scouts about. Doug said, it seems like the Bucks probably have their final grades on players already going into the combine for the most part. To your knowledge, has there been a player that the Bucks have moved up after the combine because of the performance or interviews?
Funny, we're just talking about it. I think Ali Marpet. I've written about this in a number of different ways, but I did have the opportunity that offseason to see a lot of what was going on with our draft preparations, and it was clear, Ali Marpet had been seen by one of our scouts in college, and that's it, not by Jason Light or anybody, until he got to the Senior Bowl. And then he had a great week at the Senior Bowl, so all of a sudden the Bucks were a little bit interested. They got to the combine, and he blew them away. So that's a name I remember right away as a guy that and they were already starting to like him more,
right.
But his arrow just continued to go on up. And I think that's why when it got to the draft, you remember the Buccaneers actually traded up into the bottom of the second round to make sure they got him. And my feeling was they probably felt, okay, he blew us away. We loved him even more after Indianapolis. There's probably some other teams that feel the
same
way.
Yeah.
So, and that was a good move. So, yeah, I think he would be a good example.
Okay. Bill said, what do you think is the top change necessary to return to a 2015 level Buck offense?
Okay, that offense had a really good rushing attack, right? Doug Martin had like a 1,400-yard year. The offense in the next 2 years really hasn't been significantly less productive overall because the passing game has been very good. But the running attack has really cratered the last 2 years. And I don't think we need to get back to where we were in 2015. That was Jameis's rookie season. His connection with Mike Evans wasn't as good as we would have liked. It's much better now. I don't think beyond Mike Evans we had nearly the productive receiving core that we have now. I mean, it was guys like Dante Dye that were really playing a lot of minutes, and now we have, you know, Chris Godwin and DeSean Jackson, and Adam Humphries is way better than he was. Even though he's good then, he's way better 2 years later. I don't think we need to get back to that level, but we do need to get back to a rushing game that's roughly that competent. Now, I think we were fifth in the league in rushing that year, and that would be a huge jump from where we've been the last 2 years. I'm not sure we have to get there, but top 10 would be nice because that, as everybody knows, that would add bite to play action. And as Coach Cutter always says, the most difficult type of offense to defend is a balanced offense. So it needs to get back to being balanced.
Okay. Layton says, how involved are position coaches in the draft evaluation process?
They're very involved. They ask them to watch film, and they ask them to give their opinions. And so they're in meetings from time to time. And sometimes they're called and goes, hey, we wanted to see what you think about this. But I don't think they are involved in the final decisions. They're asked to break down prospects, give their opinions, just like the scouts are. But I don't think you ever have a position coach in there swaying them to, hey, we need to take a quarterback here or running back here. So they are involved, though. And there's varying from team to team, and I think our team does a good job of involving their coaches. Some teams do it a lot. Some teams don't do it as much. I think we got a good balance.
Okay. And Rick said, are the big guys just a lot more obvious when they're talented because a big man that can also move is more rare, and also then more obvious when you have a lot of other smaller position guys that it's easier to see? And is that why they tend to need to be drafted early and quickly?
So by big guys, he means pass rushing ends, and I think this is our last question.
Yeah,
pass rushing ends and offensive linemen that can really move around.
Yeah,
that makes a lot of sense. I hadn't really thought about it in those terms before, but I do agree with the final conclusion there. To get an absolute stud offensive lineman or an absolute stud pass rusher, you usually have to get them early. And I think that's why, because you just don't find the type, you know, take a Von Miller or something like that. You just don't find that type of movement and speed in people that big. So when you see that combination, yeah, they really stand out to you.
Okay. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us on Buccaneers Insider Live presented by Miller Lite. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you next week.